live from the fashionable north side of Racine, Wisconsin. It's America's favorite podcast, unless you count pretty much every other one. It's Guys, Games, and Beer! Yeah, there we go. Now we're talking. You know what? I think we're going to just start strong with Beer Court. What
straight
do you say?
It. Straight into Beer Court.
All right.
All right, let's do this. Dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun. Beer Court.
All right, Larry, what do we got tonight?
Okay, so I listen to a lot of old-time radio broadcast, right? So you're
wow, why didn't that surprise us?
Yeah, you know, I'm always up on the times, right?
And so, sorry, Laura got me. Good one.
And right. So, for Life of Riley or My Favorite Husband or...
So if you're 90 years old, you'll know the shows that we're talking about right now. The rest of our audience is going, what the fuck?
And one of them, Boston Blackie, was supported by a beer called CV. So, you know, and they had a whole slogan, you know, like, it was like smoother, smoother. Yeah, you know, had a nice jingle.
They had an old 60s jingle.
Yeah, they had
like a 40s jingle.
Like a 40s jingle, yeah, yeah. And it was like, I got curious about it. So I was like, Champagne Velvet, is that a beer? What is that? So I looked it up, and sure enough, it was a beer, and it was...
Champagne of beer.
One of their taglines was the beer with the million-dollar flavor. Now, the reason it was called the million-dollar flavor is because the recipe was insured for $1 million.
Well, you told me this before.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm
so
thinking this is gonna be
that.
Bad.
That is it. Now, the beer is a German pils that was started in like 1902,
mm-hmm.
and it went out of business in the late 50s. So apparently, the advertisement on the radio programs didn't work. But hey, they tried.
They tried.
They tried. And so what ended up happening is that in the 90s. In Terre Haute, Indiana. So this is out of Indiana. This is the pride of Indiana.
The pride of Indiana.
Yeah. A worker was
explains a lot about
cleaning out the basement, one of the old dilapidated breweries, and found like a book. And Mike Rowe. I don't know if it's that Mike Rowe or not.
Yeah, I was wondering if it's that Mike Rowe. Dirty Jobs.
Yeah, I don't know. It says local businessman and collector of memorabilia. So
yeah, probably not.
Probably not. It just happens to be. Bought the book for $20. And he basically thought, okay, well, I kind of got ripped off on this. But, well, then he found a scrap of paper in there. And it had a 1901 letterhead. And it had a handwritten Pilsner recipe on it. And as people looked in it, they confirmed it was the original lost recipe for CV beer.
Champagne Velvet. CV, yes. You say CV. No, use the whole name.
Champagne Velvet. It was the original recipe. So, Roe, being kind of enterprising, needed the CV trademark because he didn't own that. He just had the recipe.
Right.
Which he bought from Pabst. In 1999.
Oh, you're kidding, Pabst. Pabst again had been picked up by this time, had gone out of business, but had been picked up.
Well, they never went out of business.
Well, yeah, the Chicago company bought them up. Chicago, I forget the family.
Chicago,
some
family. They'd actually shuttered their own brewery, and Miller had started probably making it by then.
Because they were doing contract brewing at that time.
Yeah, but they still existed.
But they owned the CV.
They owned the CV trademark.
That doesn't surprise me because they were buying like the Schlitz and the Pabst. Right. They bought all these. Old
Andeker.
So yeah. he bought the label and started brewing this recipe from 1901. Okay. And then he did that until 1908 when he sold it off to another brewery, the Upland Brewery, who makes it today.
98, you mean?
2008.
Okay.
And they sold it to Upland. I might have made. And they now make it with this. Now it's a blend of corn and malt barley, and they use a cluster and tannin hops.
Okay, corn's interesting.
So and, I was gonna say this
and
is
the hops are from Germany, where the founding fathers of CV came.
Before
from.
We drink it, I have two things to note. I just noticed you guys are about to go ready to pop it down. The freshness thing on the side is very interesting.
Yep.
It's marked like a fire extinguisher. Like
it is actually marked
out. Like punched out. But it's a very easy way to notice, like, oh, best
you
can
do know
by.
Right away, yeah.
And the second thing is, I think they should probably use better verbiage. But it says, this beer contains no flavors or additives. So, if it's bland, it's...
So, Upland Brewing, you might want to change the wording on the side there. Just to put that out to you. All right.
And I've been pining for this
for,
like...
And if we all die from drinking a beer
months
from 1901...
Months and months. All right. Because I found it was actually being still
It smells
made.
A little skunk.
It doesn't smell good at all.
Okay. It tastes better than it smells.
It does taste.
It definitely tastes better.
It tastes quite good. It's a very sweet pills though. It's not like a Czech style pills. Yeah. It's a German style pills.
Well,
it's okay, but it smells disgusting.
Yeah. It's a German. I like it.
I gotta say, I'm okay
That's
with
respectable.
This.
Respectable. Yeah. It's considering. I mean, pilsners are your very bland, usually pretty bland.
This has got a little sweetness to it.
Well,
I
mean,
that's
the
corn.
If you start thinking about it in the Slitz, Blatz, you know, sort of American style German,
right? An American style Pilsner lager type beer.
Yeah,
but you know, and the, again,
very clean.
Yeah, it's. I gotta say, there's a touch of hoppiness to it, though. Still, for a Pils, again, it's a German Pils. I know.
Yeah, there's definitely hops in it.
I'm saying that cookie dough beer was better than this stuff.
Really?
Really?
Really? Oh,
that cookie
dough
beer
was nasty.
Bad.
Well, this is pretty nasty.
Oh, man.
I think there's a palate change in Millenniums.
Millennials.
In the Millennium Falcon.
Dang.
Millennium Falcon. Yeah, exactly.
You never showed your age so much.
I'm a millennium.
No, I think there is a bit of a
palate
shift.
With your Pokemans.
And like, maybe. Like I think I may damn.
I'm not a
this.
Big fan of Pilsners either. So
see,
I
but you know me, I like my.
So if you drink Pabst, you know, if you don't
but
even Pabst like
is
Pabst
a lager.
To start with.
I hate Pabst. I don't like. See, I like my dark beers and I like my.
You know me, I'm much.
All right, for the love of God.
All right.
Well, on the upside, you are tasting a bit of history, so.
I'm surprised that I like it.
I kind of like that sweet finish on it.
Smell is like 70% taste.
Well, then don't smell it; just drink it. Ugh. No, I'm gonna thumbs up on this. All right, Rob.
All right, on count one.
Wait.
Before we put a passive verdict, we should
have a moment of silence for another famous judge tonight.
Yeah, I'm sorry to report that Judge Wapner has passed away.
The court
of
the people.
All courts.
Yes.
People.
Yeah, that's right. So from
our inspiration.
From one famous judge to another, Rob. We'll have a moment of silence for Judge Wapner.
Pour one out on
the laptop. We'll pour one out on the laptop. All right, Rob, what's the verdict tonight on the beer?
Count one, impersonating champagne. I find you guilty. Don't be impersonating champagne. It's not right even to put
the original
champagne
of beers.
Champagne.
Like, you know, one that's, yeah, that's probably pretty... That's going to be close about the same time as Miller. So, yeah. All right, continue.
Count two on the charge of stealing over $1 million in bonds to get your $1 million flavor. I find you also guilty. Sentence.
Sentence?
Drinking. No,
all
I'll
right. You're tasty, we'll drink you.
I do find that interesting, man. Apparently there was a movement there to just, like, compare all beer to champagne.
Yeah, that's true. I've got to check and see what year Miller came out, because you're right, this is champagne of it. Miller was the champagne
Miller Genuine
of beer.
Draft only was 1986. And that's
champagne
of beers.
No, the champagne of beers
is Miller High Life.
High Life is the champagne of beers.
What year was that?
I want to say that's like 1904
That's going to be back around the same time.
Yeah. Well, beer, like, was for, like, poor folk. Champagne wasn't, so they were, like, trying
I suppose that makes sense. Well, okay, so...
That's a bizarre thing.
All right, so, Rob, what is the actual topic of tonight's show?
Tonight, we are going to be talking about cloud-based crime. And to talk with us about this game is...
Tyrus Peace of Floating Island Games.
All right, so, Floating Island Games. So, you got... This is your... Not your first game out...
No, Floating Island Games was formed pretty much just for this game so far, but I, Tyrus Peace, have made many games, yeah. The first couple games that I actually released are on the Ouya, though, so I'm not sure that counts for most people.
Ouya fires!
Yeah. Come on, it counts around here.
Rob was an evangelist. So
yeah, he was. We,
God, what a mistake.
We literally have done shows about the Ouya.
Hey, great idea. The execution was the problem.
Yeah, it had potential. It had real potential.
Well, you know, I got what I wanted out of it, and I was kind of confused that everybody else wanted it, though. And, turns out they didn't want the same thing I did, and all imploded pretty badly. But
yeah.
I mean, nowadays you got stuff like, you know, NVIDIA Shield TV. You got stuff like that. So, yeah. I mean, without the Ouya, well, it probably still would have happened. But, you know,
it knew it was there. It knew it had a market.
It knew it was there.
The storm didn't align well, you know? Like, yeah. The market was there. People play Android games and, like, you know, those quick...
Well, it doesn't help when your controllers don't work.
Yeah, it didn't. They sent me
Yeah, you just had to have perfect line of sight and not tilt it.
Yeah, you know it. We had a... We did Midwest Gaming Classic.
We did Bomb Squad
on there a few years back. That was really popular. People loved it.
All right, so you started programming for the Ouya.
But today we're going to be talking about Cloud Based Prime, which is on...
Not on the Ouya.
Not on the Ouya. It is on Steam Early Access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And would you, for people who know nothing about the game, would you kind of like give us a little synopsis about it?
Sure. In Cloud Based Prime, you pilot a robot suit on a gas giant mining platform, and things go wrong. You can move tiles that the platform is made of to clear paths, defeat enemies, or launch yourself skyward. Basically, you shoot at robots while jumping a lot. And launching your enemies with the terrain gives you more fuel once you've defeated them. That powers your special weapons, and then you can launch more enemies. It's kind of a nice loop like that.
Yeah, Rob mentioned to me, and again, this is one of my favorite childhood games, and like, it's a very niche, but Jumping Flash, like that whole kind of air mechanic.
Yeah, and they actually mentioned that. I was kind of surprised because I read your description of the game after I played it, and because I was thinking, boy, this reminds me of Jumping Flash, you know, and sure enough, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very, very cool mechanic, and again, so it's the verticality is something you really just don't get in enough games, and like it really kind of it's a very interesting way to play something, especially a platformer.
And this has some extreme verticality too. Right?
Yeah, I
did notice that. Well, you're really getting up there.
Yeah, we were playing. We had a small LAN party last weekend. I was showing it off at the LAN party.
Great.
And
yeah, that actually started as a 7-day FPS entry for. June 2012, I think that was the first 70 FPS game jam, actually. And I had this idea that I really wanted to try and make a mouse-look Jumping Flash. Because still, I mean, that game was just... It didn't even have analog sticks, right? It was just a D-pad.
Yep.
That was before the DualShock came out in the original PlayStation. And the jumping worked. And that's the thing that everybody says about first-person shooters. Like, oh, hell no. You know, not another platforming segment. This is terrible. And I thought, wait, Jumping Flash worked. It does not even have analog.
Or like in a shooter, like so many times in multiplayer shooters or anything, or even single player shooters, you're running around hopping, bunny hopping like crazy. Why not just have a game that embraces that? That embraces the fact, hey, you go vertical, you know? Like, So you started it as a game jam, and I watching the gameplay, the aesthetic of it is very interesting, kind of like a computer industrially. How did you kind of decide what the game was going to look like?
Well, a big part of how my games look hinges on the fact that I need to be able to make it. It's just me.
Yeah. One man
so
crew,
I keep things a little simple. But also, I like sharp edges. They really help bring out that polygonal style without actually being as crappy looking as like Star Fox or something. You know? I want people to look at it and think, oh yeah, this reminds me of Star Fox. But, you know, not actually look like it because you have that nostalgia filter going on.
So, the amazing
well, you got five digits in a hand, so. You know, most a lot of animation, they.
Yeah.
Just for convenience, they just cut it to four.
It's just, just the number of fingers.
Drunken Larry's been drinking. I was wondering where Larry was going.
Like,
Drunken Larry's been drinking already.
What does it have to do with anything?
Well, no.
I thought he was like trying to make fun of people who like have missing fingers.
A lot of animation style Because a hand is kind of...
Simplicity.
It hard to draw all five digits and still...
We get it now.
Look correct. You know? So
well,
I mean,
spoilers,
you know,
you do get more fingers later in the game.
All right, so you did this originally for a game jam back in 2012.
Yes, and I have not been working on it full-time since then. I've only really been working full-time on it for, since September 2015 is when I quit my job and moved to Texas and started up Floating Island Games. Before that, I was working sort of part-time on it, off and on, still doing a lot of other game jams as well, so it was really stop and go before that point, I would say.
So, So, you've 2015 is your actual when you started kind of devoting time to this particular game. So, right now you are in pre-release on Steam.
What's the timeline?
Yeah, what is the timeline as far as full release?
Right now, I'm hoping for a beta within the next month and a half, and depending on how that goes, I could release a month or two after that. Of course, that's what betas are for. I don't know for sure. There could be a lot of shit wrong in there that I'll find.
So you're actually looking at a fairly accelerated schedule now as far as getting it to market and getting it on Steam.
It's on.
Well, you know what I mean, but I mean the full version, right? The full product.
Yeah, I've only got a couple more levels story wise to do, and I can always add more content after the official release. But in terms of considering it done and ready to release, that's about where I'm planning to take it, yeah.
So, it looks... All right, just sort of looking at it cold, you think it's kind of a solo game, not a multiplayer element. Is it a solo game, like a story beginning to end, or
is it more arcadey, or is it, yeah?
Yeah, it's a lot more of a kind of old school game. It definitely has an ending. That's part of why I have such a accelerated schedule, as you said, compared to a normal early access game. I mean, a lot of those, they just sort of poke at it, add random features. It's a sandbox game, and it slowly grows into something over the course of years.
Yeah.
Whereas, I'm planning a very specific game that's stage-based, and once you get to the end of the story, that's it. Good for you. that's all I'm going for.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed it.
I think looking at some of the animation or like looking at the style of it, I think it's very different. It definitely stands out. Like, where did you get some of the inspirations from besides just kind of something that's easier for you to design wise? Is there any places you kind of drew inspiration from to kind of get the look and feel for it?
I mean, I really wanted people to look at it and say, like, damn, that looks like Star Fox and sex met a baby.
Again,
it doesn't make sense. It's just I want people to say that, So
yeah, I don't care if they right.
Again, yeah. I mean, you look at screenshots or like a quick video. It looks very cool. Like the design is very unique for sure.
I get kind of a Rez feel off it, but
yeah. But
that's
again,
fair enough.
No, that is fair enough because graphically the game is fairly stylized and
it's stylized, but. I mean, what Rez was, and I think what kind of is there. I mean, it was in between, simple and stylized and simple. You know,
right.
I mean, where you the lines are clean. You can see what you know. There isn't a lot of things blurring everything, but
right. The elements
what's
of the,
there
right, you have the elements of the game.
Clear.
And you don't have a lot of extra junk floating around in the background.
Yeah, a big part of what I wanted in the design of all of the enemies and whatnot, which really did drive the style a lot as well, is that I wanted everything to be functional. I mean, extremely simple, yes, but I want the different robot parts to all make sense. This thing could have actually morphed from a different robot before it got infected. Different plants and whatnot that still look like that they could be machine based and all of that. And so I kept on going back to that, really wanting functional parts in all of the characters. And I think that really helps, because when you simplify something down to those basic designs, if it has enough parts to make it interesting, it still looks cool. It still looks good.
You know what? I just realized that wasn't just a joke. You actually do get more fingers.
Wow. Okay.
I'm looking at some of the screenshots. I'm like, oh my god, there's only three digits in
this screenshot.
And this one, there's five. It really does increase your fingers.
Just like real life, Larry. Just like real life.
That's pretty funny.
So, again, so besides this... being so you have platforming elements, you obviously have shooter elements. Is like what, as you progress through the game, do the elements of the platforming change, or there puzzles, or what do you kind of see as you kind of go through the game?
Yeah, there are actually a lot of things that tweak the formula as you go through. One of the main things is that you'll unlock new powers for your suit, new upgrades for it. So initially, when you start off, you can glide, you can move the terrain up and down, you can shoot. But pretty quickly, you start getting things like a shockwave that you can shoot out that's powered by the fuel you get from launching enemies. A terrain grenade, which it's more or less a standard grenade, but it leaves a giant crater in the terrain. And a hollow terrain, which shakes things up by letting you temporarily make ground beneath yourself, which you can use to knock homing missiles out of the ground, out of the sky, or just get places you wouldn't otherwise. Standard sort of death beams. But also, there's a lot of things focused on making you move through the levels faster. So that's something I hear a lot from YouTubers that play, you know, the first 10 minutes of the game. They go, oh, this feels kind of slow. And I really want them to get, you know, another level in and see that, hey, I actually have entire rail systems designed for you to get from point A to point B faster. You can launch yourself like a projectile through the level by moving these things around, solving little physics puzzles for yourself.
There's a lot to be said for a pacing of a game. Like, you know, having something that's easy enough that you can pick up, learn it, and kind of expand on those basic principles, or, you know, it's an addictive quality, too. If you build something well, it doesn't have to be super complicated. You have good aspects, and again, a player can actually kind of pick up and progress. It leaves a really good feeling, for sure.
I think if you're walking around a lot, you're playing the game wrong.
Yeah, that's
I shoot into the air.
I really want people to launch themselves.
Yeah, I launch myself in the air the second I get out there, and I'm jumping.
If you're slow, then launch yourself, because that's real fast.
Yeah, right.
You get unnerving. It, you know,
it is. My God, if you put this on a VR headset, I'd be a train wreck.
Oh, yeah, I've been asked that a lot, and I'm like, well, you know, the central mechanic is hitting yourself in the face of the ground and then accelerating up.
Yeah. That is exactly true.
So there would be some real problems with that. I mean, I can see how it could be cool, but yeah, I'd have to basically start over with the speed of everything to make sure that people don't immediately vomit.
definitely once you get all your fixer robots and you become super powered, you can jump like super high. Yeah, vomit time there.
I think you get that elevator feeling in your nethers, real bad.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe should that for...
Should still probably do that. Yeah, just for the sake of it.
So I'm going to get down in the weeds a little bit. So Unity Engine on this one?
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Yeah, so yeah, from a developer standpoint, you find Unity... And we've talked to other developers about using Unity. It seems like this is a good fit for that particular engine, for all the physics you've got going on in this particular game.
Yeah, it works pretty well for it. Honestly, there are a lot of challenges, things that I've made custom solutions for, because it turns out having thousands of physics objects just hanging out, waiting to launch them up in the air, it's real expensive. Like, it looks like a simple game. And I optimized it to run on, like, an 8-year-old MacBook and a Surface Pro 3 that I have sitting around my house. But it took a lot of work to get there. You know, I'm literally batching these things up and grouping them, turning them off when you're not looking. Because, yeah, just treating them like standard objects would not have worked. But that said, Unity in general, I mean, I can support Mac, Linux, and Windows now.
Yeah.
And that's huge. Yeah. And I could not have done that by myself.
I'll have to hit it up this on my time, Linux box.
Yeah. Rob's eyes just lit up when you went Linux on that, because now he's going to put it on his Linux system as well. So, again, you're a company of one. But there's other elements in the game besides just the graphics. You're doing all your own graphics. You're doing all your own programming. Who's doing the voice acting?
Yeah,
that actually is me as well. So sorry about
Jesus.
That.
Jesus. Okay. You are
a man of many hats.
Yeah, I was going to say you are a force of nature
like
on
a prodigy.
This one.
Yeah, the writing I think is one of the things that really.
Voice acting is freaking awesome.
Yeah, I know. It drew me. One of the things that really drew me to the game, like, right away, and that is one of my problems. I've got a fairly large Steam collection, so if anything gets more than one play out of me, it's pretty...
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be pretty exceptional, but it draws you in right away, into the story right away, and you're getting some laughs right away. It's actually funny. I mean, it's pretty funny and weird.
Yeah, so...
I like that about it.
No, the writing and the voice acting are spot on this, so yeah, that's...
So you did the music, too?
No, I did not do the music.
Okay, all right, we finally
Matt Seven Shear worked on that, actually. He's very good. Basically, I told him at the outset, I want the music to get more organic, less synthetic, the further down you go, to match how the world changes. And he thought that sounded really cool and did it way better than I could have imagined. He's very good, and I recommend working with him to anybody that, you know, needs that.
Sometimes I just sit on the menu and listen for a bit.
Music is always my favorite part of any game.
You know, that really can be. You know, I mean, I know that people have bought in soundtracks to
Jet Set Radio Future. It's like my first video game. That was like my first video game soundtrack.
Yeah.
Crazy Taxi.
I love Crazy Taxi.
You take Offspring out of that, and it's
right.
Sadder.
Then you're just driving around a taxi.
Or yeah, I mean that in Bad Religion. Yeah.
Those are the two. You need those two. But for voice acting and writing, I actually had a fair amount of experience with keeping scripts short, at least, because I worked on a webcomic for a few years. So that actually ended up being pretty helpful, both in terms of giving me art sense and, yeah, keeping things short, which is really important when you're actually recording the lines, because you realize when you write out, like, a paragraph of text, like, nobody talks like this. This sounds stupid as hell when I say that. You want to finish talking the second you started talking, and so you keep everything rather what would read as terse if it was text, but just sounds normal otherwise. And so I'm
kind of
thankful
cool.
that for some reason I wrote a webcomic for 5 years.
What webcomic did you do?
Not Included. So you can go to not-included.net, and it's still there, still kicking.
Cool. All right. So
now Flipping Tale of
So that gave you your pacing and so on. And again, that 5 years of experience is quite a bit of time on a webcomic. It comes through on this. The dialogue is extremely good, and the voice acting really works.
Yeah, enough that we thought it was multiple people doing it.
I
didn't even consider the fact that it was just one person doing it. Usually something comes up.
And with the Henry Shear Award,
there's some exceptions. There are some exceptions, but as a general rule, usually when you've got a really small development team, you can see where where there's a gap in what they know. Whereas this comes together really well. I talked a bit about games that basically ooze love out of them. Like, you could tell the developer loved making the game, and I think this is one of those games that you can tell that every detail is being just poured over in it. And I think that's one of the things that really shows up in this game and makes it exceptional.
Well, thanks a lot. I'm lucky in that I can really spend a lot of time on this. You know, It's because I do so much of the stuff, I'm ping-ponging back and forth. And a lot of the time you'd think that would mean I'd spend less time on dumb details, but at the same time, those things actually help a lot. You know, when I get pissed off at programming or something, I just go, well, you know what, I'm going to make this grass look better. Something minor, something stupid, you know, there's always a dumb task to do.
You know, being part of a smaller operation, did you look at forums or there's certain kinds of, like, voice acting, for example. I mean, if when you put a call out for that, I think back a few years back now, I knew someone that was writing some mods for a game, and they put a call out, and they in return he got all kinds of, you know, voice acting, you know, out of Australia.
You'd be amazed. I mean, there are some amazing voice actors.
I mean, there are people just
kind
of willing to be part of something.
Just be part of something.
You know?
I'm saying in the mix of that.
Wow. So, I mean, did you try any of that, or it didn't work out, or?
I didn't for voice acting specifically because my writing process is so bad. Right now, I'll start with a script, and then I'll say it out loud, and I'll realize, yeah, this sounds terrible spoken out loud. This just isn't
doable. It'll take other people's time, tone, too, yeah. You know?
And so I'll go, okay, I'll rewrite it halfway through, and then I'll say it over and over again and go, oh, that's the thing I want, because I'm not a good director, but I know what I want in my head. Like,
right,
the director
right,
can
right.
tell somebody else what they want.
Right.
And I can't do that with somebody else, but I can do it with myself. You know, I can, in my head, I go, no, I think that sucks, and I don't need to explain why. I can just try again. Whereas if I was doing that with somebody else, first off, it would take forever.
You're right.
I mean, you know, a lot of those forums is, oh, okay, yeah, they want to be part of something, and it's kind of like, you know, a chance to sort of get out there. And the expectation is, oh, you've given me a well-vetted script, and I'm just gonna put flair on it, and as opposed to, hey, this is a sort of almost a mind experiment. We're going to throw things at the wall and see what works.
For example, there's a robot in the game that has 9 heads. And so I had to rewrite the entire script after I started writing it, because it turns out when you have the same voice shooting from 9 heads at the same time, it sounds really different. And, well, it was, you know, 9 separate recordings of me playing at once.
I assume the heads talk to each other, right?
They're actually mostly
talking. You suck!
Think.
Head number
in a while,
3.
Take turns, I think, but for the most part, they're a hive mind. But that did have the side effect of literally breaking my ability to understand or speak English for like about half an hour, so I don't recommend it.
Recording on top of yourself.
And listening to it over and over and over again. I mean, I get so sick of all my voice lines after I've heard them, you know, 20 times in a row. It's usually a point where I'm like, well, I hate it, but not enough that I think I'll hate it tomorrow. And that's probably pretty good, actually.
So, what's on the immediate development roadmap for this game?
Right now, there's these last couple of levels in the final zone, which is it's the tower. And so you're basically going to be climbing aboard a giant evil robot factory and taking it out from the inside, and that'll be done across a couple of different levels. And besides that, I just wrapped up a whole bunch of boring, like, add all the options that people want before beta sort of lap. So I'm getting to get back into game content again. Right now I'm working on a new power, like an ice bullet that can freeze enemies, which of course can horribly break balance.
It's amazing. Like, you're like, oh man, this sounds like a great idea on paper, and then you put it, if you like test around it, and it's like, oh man, this totally screws things up. Unexpected ways, for sure.
Yeah, I have these walker enemies who are programmed to walk from hexagon to hexagon, like each leg grabs a separate hexagon, and basically every time I add something cool, it finds a way to break those damn walkers. It's a huge pain in the ass, because it's the most custom thing I've made in the game besides the actual terrain. It's, you know, a lot of, it's kind of a, each leg has its own AI, and they all are told where to go by the hive mind, sort of like a how a cockroach works or the Mars lander.
You can really
Mars
hose
rover,
them.
Sorry.
You can really hose them if you mess with that, with the land.
That's
how I take them down. You know? Like messing with the land till they trip up,
and then take them out.
Yeah.
So.
I was doing that in the game while you were watching.
Yeah, you're demming it.
That's why I was being so ridiculous with that. It just gets them off kilter so I can not get missiles launched at my head.
Why?
Damn those things. Damn those things. Oh, sorry, I'm okay now. I'm over it.
So, and we like to talk about people. So you went the Steam route on this. Mm-hmm. How did you go? So to get this into this, did you have a... I'm sorry, did you do with the
Get my words right.
Did you greenlight this project? Thank you.
Yeah, I got on Steam greenlight, and did decently successful for a day, and then just everything dropped off for a few months. And it looks like somebody at Valve actually kind of manually pushed me through after a while, which is cool.
No, that's great, yes!
Yeah, it's like, oh, somebody at this company I really respect just saw me and poked me through, like, thanks. But at the same time, you know, I was kind of hoping Greenlight would be this thing for people to sort of group group up and make a community around to help push me through.
Yeah.
And I was initially thinking, ah, it's fine if it takes, you know, another year even, because this was a while ago. I mean, I was still, yeah, 2014 maybe before I had Floating Island Games even. And but nope, you know, I didn't really get that extra chance at attention. The trade-off, of course, is that my game's on Steam.
We talked about this on the show. Yeah, we've done exponentially.
Right, because of the growth of Steam, it's getting harder and harder to greenlight games. Because,
or like be found.
Right, you get lost in the stacks and stacks of materials that come out. So again, to have somebody from Valve take interest in you and push you through is
Tumbleweed had that problem for a while, and then all of a sudden they just gained ground and boom.
But that took Tumbleweed a couple of years.
Because they had an unsuccessful Kickstarter.
Right. Yeah. So
they eventually
the Dirigiballers.
Right. Another group awesome, we know called Dirigiballers. They had a really good game called Tumbleweed. I mean, it really
Tumbleweed
was.
Tumbleweed Express. Yeah.
Yeah. It was spectacular.
It made it.
We had seen it early in development, and then they went to Steam and tried to greenlight it, and got a lot, like you said, got that a lot of interest in the first few days, and then it just dropped off. Yeah. Eventually, it picked up again, and after, but it took a while.
Yeah, you're just gonna hit that critical mass.
There's no
magic formula.
And it gets harder and harder because there's so much more material now, more content coming out. That it just get things too tend to get lost in the shuffle.
I think if you got your mechanics straight, I think that's it. And Tumbleweed, one of the things was they straightened out a lot of their mechanics. I mean, you play the game that we did. We've had them on, I think, twice.
Yeah,
they've been on the show twice.
We had them on like years ago when they first started.
Right.
And you could tell it was going to be something kind of cool, but they didn't have their mechanics straight. But when you saw it later, all of a sudden the mechanics were
everything was
were like 110%.
Sharp.
I think that's one of the things where you've got it pretty much out of the gate right now. It's the mechanics are straight.
And that's it. I suspect that's why the Unity guy pushed you through too. Your mechanics are so solid.
It's fun to control. I mean,
it really is. It's great to see how well that works. So greenlighted now. You're going on that. You've got a fairly ambitious schedule coming up. So far, the reaction on Steam, how's that been for you?
I've got 4 positive reviews, so I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah! Well, we'll have to give you a couple more after now that we've been playing it for a bit, but... Have you reviewed it yet, Rob? You've been playing
it's all four.
I was just going to say all 4 of Rob's reviews, right.
It's hard to do. You know, I'm not going to watch... I'm so sad that I have to play games that I enjoy on a stream sometimes. It's such a terrible thing. But you know, you've got your Steadfasts, and then you do Indie Gems, like so beyond Indie Gems.
Yeah.
And Indie Gems comes out about once a month. Whereas XD Live and stuff like I'm going into the mechanics of my station, which is
right, so Rob on YouTube.
Yeah. I don't push it very often here.
Right, well, let me just push it there for you.
Nobody here cares.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't care. Only Ryan watches it.
Well, we care.
Nobody
we care that you
have
it, but nobody can promote it. Or whatever you want. Yeah. This is your show, too.
Nah.
He doesn't want his actual channel associated with this.
I'm just going to say.
Oh, no!
Yeah. Do not associate
Hey, G2B is proudly displayed on the
regular
basis. No, it's one of those things. I never feel... I don't know how you feel about this, but I never feel real... I hate pushing my stuff in forums and stuff. Even the Facebook forums for the GPD people. By the way, can you map that thing to a controller fairly decently?
It's got a pretty good Steam controller support right now.
Oh,
and I just put in
too
the
bad
new...
Matt's not here.
Matt loves his
Steam controller.
There's
a good mapping for that out right now. I'm not sure if it has all the powers in it yet. A friend of mine made it months ago before he had all the powers unlocked necessarily. But I did just add a new backend which should make controller mapping more doable. I haven't tested it out yet, so I haven't actually enabled controller support. So sorry about that. But hopefully.
Hopefully
it'll work
well.
I really need to see because the crux of the game is that, you know, you're looking down a lot. And so I suspect I need to actually add a button to instantly look down on a controller and see how that works.
Oh, yeah.
But short of that, I think it should work.
I would think. I mean, I played Jumping Flash on a small screen and it worked pretty well, so I think this
Yes, one. But Jumping Flash automatically made you look at the ground when you jumped, whereas this makes you look down before you jump, and you have to do it manually with your mouse, which is a good way to do Jumping Flash with mouse look, but that doesn't necessarily convert back to working with a controller in the end. So
I might want to add it to the controller feature. I guess you could add it as an option.
Yeah, yeah. I just need to test it out.
You know, you don't even think about it with the mouse. You know, I didn't even think about it. Yeah, you do look down just by nature. Oh, my darn.
Looking down is very fast on the mouse, right? But with an analog stick, it could be kind of a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
That said, looking down is pretty fast. I mean, most people, when they suck at an FPS, they're staring at their feet the whole time anyway, so.
That's why I hate FPSs.
And being eaten by zombies at the same time.
Yes.
I'm looking at my feet and being eaten by zombies.
Or Larry.
I'm always looking at my feet or in the air. And Justin's like, well, what are you doing? Look straight. And I'm like, I'm trying.
It's just such cool stuff.
There could be something up there.
I'm not doing this on purpose.
But the cloud-based prime's unfortunately not a great fit for early access, so I haven't been pushing it too hard. I've got kind of a slightly stronger push planned for actual release, so hopefully it'll do a little better than four more reviews at least.
Yeah, because I was thinking it's got a lot more polish than a lot of stuff that's right now.
and that's the thing. Besides, again, like you said, you have to do some more levels and maybe a little more, bit more debugging, but generally the game feels fairly complete at this point already.
That's good. I'm really not planning on making huge changes to the first few levels.
So. Yeah, no, they are so solid.
I don't think I've run into any bugs or anything.
No. So that's a solid feel. All right, well, so this one's almost done. You got a few more levels to go, and you'll get this one pushed out. Future plans?
Here he goes.
I've got a few different game ideas. But also, you know, depending on how much Cloudbase Prime takes off, I could support that a little bit longer. I've got a few different feature ideas floating around that could help prolong it. Unfortunately, the things that I use to make the levels internally are mostly built into the Unity editor. I've just modified it internally. It's a very easy engine to do that with, actually. So that makes it kind of hard for me to release a level editor. But it's still something I daydream about. If for some reason Cloudbase Prime were to do well enough for me to just be able to work on something like that for half a year. But honestly, I'd probably I'm going to move on to my next game idea, which won't necessarily be in the same genre. It could be a 3D action, could be like a JRPG. Just want to try out a few different things, probably make a few different prototypes as entries into different game jams. It's been a while since I did one of those.
I was just going to say, so you sounds like you were doing quite a few game jams for a while there.
Yeah. Geez, I think I was doing a game a month for a good while there.
Crap. So we've been to Boston a few times for their game jam, which is also coincides with the Boston Festival of Independent Gamers, BFIG. And they always have a game jam going on there. How's the Texas for game jams?
Well, you know, I looked it up once and found a website that said, Texas Game Jam Convention, and they misspelled the word convention.
Oh.
And there was a WordPress template with, a teddy bear on it.
I mean, it's Texas. You can't expect
a Grateful Dead teddy bear?
No, just sort of this is your mom trying to make a website, and this was the default WordPress template, and then she forgot our password, is what this website is.
Which is probably exactly what happened.
It could be.
But, I mean, Austin obviously is very cool for that, but that's a ways out for me, 5 or 6 hours away, maybe more like 7 hours away from Lubbock.
Yeah, when you...
Because everything's that far away in Texas.
Yeah, when you say you're in the Northern Plains, whatever they call that. Yeah.
The Great...
Yeah, you're
High Plains.
The High Plains.
The High Plains.
You are up there in Texas. I never got that far up in Texas when I was there. I was always in Southern Texas. So people forget that's a long drive, even on a good day.
No, it's a big state.
Well, there's nothing between you and Austin. There's nothing. There is nothing.
What
out
is
there.
Dallas code is?
Southern Texas.
I'd say Dallas.
Just really southern?
Yeah. There's a lot
of... It's like middle of
There's
the
a
state.
Lot of Texas north of Dallas, okay?
There is.
Geography
middle.
101.
There's a lot of Texas north of there. So,
it seems like it's a
little
higher.
I'm in
a little
hat, so, I'm on top of...
You are all the way up there.
Besides Amarillo, yeah.
I love it.
So, you're almost in love with Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much so.
Wonderful Oklahoma. But unfortunately, I don't really go to game jams in person very much, or fortunately, perhaps. It's a little easier at home, honestly. You get to, sleep, and you get to...
You barely put on clothes, that's nice.
Yeah.
You don't really have to do that in person, either.
Have you gone to any in person?
No. I've had friends come over to my house before to do game jams years ago, and that was fun. But, for the most part, I work on games alone during these competitions anyway. So Ludum Dare, for example, has a 48-hour solo competition, and then they have a 72-hour team-based jam. And I usually just do the solo competitions.
Because it seems like for me at least, like the in-person, almost having a LAN party kind of thing would be just kind of like, maybe just kind of some fun to
that. Well, no, and that's what we saw at Boston. That's a whole different type of environment when you do those kind of in-person game jams, where you've got the small groups working on games.
You're throwing ideas back, and the whole everything's loud. Yeah,
are you planning on expanding, or are you planning on just keeping it you?
I'm planning on just keeping it me. A big reason that I started this company and moved was so that I could start a family also. And so I need to be able to be home.
Yeah.
At home. And so that's really the main goal. It's just something that I'm good at that I can do for my home, and I know I can sell to people. More so than generic computer science skills. Of course, it's something I love. I really like making games and art, and I'm fortunate there. But this is sort of the end product of my wife and I sort of planning for a very long time what our jobs would be down the road. My wife's actually a professor, and she finally got her PhD a couple years back, and we looked at it and said, all right, I think we might actually be able to pull the trigger and do this. I might be able to work at home in game dev, and now I'm trying it. And I'm not here in hopes of really making money. Even it's just something I know that I can at least try to make money with at home. And before this, I saved up for 8 years working in the industry in computer science. I'm not fresh out of college. I didn't say, "Oh, screw working for the man. I'm going to go make a game." That wasn't my approach.
You aren't a millennium.
we already know that you both do the technical element, writing a game, coding for a game, and you also do the sort of artistic elements, drawing, voice acting. Which element do you prefer doing?
That's a real toughie. I'd say programming. Now, I really like the art, but it's best in the context of being a break from programming. So it's kind of a yin-yang thing where if I didn't have the programming there in the first place, I would just get lost in the weeds making grass forever. I wouldn't really have that drive, that reminder of, hey, you're working on this overall feature. So, I really like the whole craft, having this concert ping pong in the back of my head saying, okay, you're working on this end of the same task right now, finish it up, get on to the next thing. I really got into that when I was working professionally, just getting schedules together and finishing things. And in game jams, that was the main thing I learned. I think that's the main thing everybody takes out of game jams. That's why they like them, because it's so easy to just tinker with random shit forever when you have something like Unity that can do basically anything in a video game that you'd ever want. And instead, you've given 48 hours, make a game, or you've made nothing, go now.
Yeah.
And that's just a wonderful motivator. And once you've learned the skill of shipping, and by which I mean shipping software, the other kind of shipping could be really good too. I'm not really versed in that, unfortunately.
Maybe your next thing.
But once you've learned that, I mean, that's kind of the central attraction of game dev, I think. At least for indie people that do, you know, the whole thing.
Well, you know, a lot of the companies, staff, developers we've run into, they don't usually do all elements like that. You know, there's usually a focus.
Right, one guy does art, one guy does programming. They may do voices as well, but usually you'll have somebody doing.
Yeah, you know, so they might get the wife involved.
Which happens more often than you can imagine. You know,
but you usually don't get someone who's really into doing both.
Everything at this point. I mean, not just both. I mean, again, literally
everything but music.
Everything but the music, yeah. and so.
Well, speaking of, is there going to be OST? Is there going to be a music release as well?
Yes, it's actually out already. You can
there you go. Google
it and find it on Bandcamp. I believe Matt's already put it up.
every time somebody mentions Bandcamp, we do the Bandcamp.
Yeah, well, it's hard not to.
I'm trying.
It's one time, and then Bandcamp.
But actually, currently it makes me think of Owlbear songs.
I mean, you had a preemptive sigh for it
at
that time.
So. Yeah, he did. He
like, wait, why is there a sign?
He had us covered on that.
Owlbear songs.
Oh, yeah. Have you hugged your owlbear today?
Have you hugged
your owlbear? Again, there's a guy who we know who does gaming music, so also on Bandcamp.
He is on Bandcamp.
One of his CDs is called
Bandcamp.
I think it's called Bardcamp.
Bardcamp, yes. So, but yeah, but that's a whole other thing. All right. So, if people want to find your game in the green light, they can find it at.
Let's pass key.
Cloud. They can find it at cloudbasedprime.com.
All right.
And now that's just going to be on Steam proper at this point. Steam Early Access.
Right. And how much is it going for on Steam Early Access?
$10.
$9.99, people, really. $9.99. And this is a...
You can bounce around like a Mexican jumping bean.
It's tough to really describe this game.
And shoot stuff.
You don't... and again, we made some comparisons earlier to Jumping Jack.
Jumping Flash.
I'm sorry, Jumping Flash. Thank you.
No Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, we made some early comparisons to that.
See, and he thought my jumping bean was out of bounds.
Well, I wasn't going quite back that far. You know, it's... Again, it's got a completely... I'm going to disagree with that a little bit. I think it's got a very different feel from that.
I mean, you...
Maybe some of the mechanics are similar, but...
I wouldn't... You can't be... You couldn't call it, like, a Jumping Flash clone.
No.
It's just that you don't see that mechanic very often. That's why that comes up.
That's true, because it's an unusual mechanic.
There's a little bit of tonality with Portal. There's a little bit of that in there too, but just in the tonality.
Yeah, all right.
But I would argue that there are a lot of games with talking robots, though.
Robots.
Yeah, but we were kind of going with the mechanics, but yes, there are a lot of games with talking robots.
There's not a lot of games with talking robots with that. There's just this the humor is that kind of humor. It's a different direction.
I thought it was the humor of you just putting your hair in a ponytail.
That was
while you were talking
about humor. So they can find it out. They can go to your site, cloudbasedprime.com. We'll have links on the website for that. And check the game out there. You've got some videos there. You've got some descriptions of the game. If you want to find it, just go to Steam. You can find it on Steam.
There's totally going to be a link
to
the Steam.
Which there will also be a link on our website for. Again, cool game, a lot of potential coming up. I'm dying to see the final levels coming up, and do a lot more gameplay on it.
It's in the uncommon column.
In Steam.
I mean in the gameplay, you know, so if you're looking for something...
Yeah, the different. Not your typical platformer, not your typical...
You know, that view is just, it's a little in the uncommon.
Yeah, I agree on that. Yeah,
you know what, one of the things is, you know, and usually when you say uncommon, it means janky, but the game's not janky.
The controls are
110%.
It's just not what other people are doing.
Yeah, I know. I'm throwing that out there, because, you know, some people use that as an excuse for janky controls. There's absolutely no janky controls.
Oh, no.
I would say, like, you know, when I say it's like Jumping Flash, I would say the controls are improved.
Almost
but
definitely.
Obviously, on Jumping Flash's controls, but it still maintains that proper platformer feel, which is exactly what you say you were going for, which is, you know, a first-person platformer that you can actually play.
And
enjoy, yeah.
Again, without the feel of a standard platformer, you know, without that 2D blah, 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 you know.
I got no problem with 2D platformers.
Mario was awesome.
We're
not here to argue, guys.
Right.
I am really looking for, like, that Jumping Flash fan community that I'm sure is out there, you know?
There is.
I think you found them.
At least a few of us.
It's funny, though, because so many people, you know, you mentioned Jumping Flash, they go, oh, I love that game.
Yeah, it's easy to forget, but it was one of the first 3D platformers, or like 3D games I played, period.
Yeah.
So, and again, it was very unique, and I had been like 7 or 8 at the time, so it was a very like fond place in my heart.
Right.
Yeah, but it played well. I mean, it took, even Super Mario, see, here we go. We segued, but and it's me too, which is
unusual, you really did.
But still, you know, even like with N64's Mario, which was actually a pretty darn good game, it never felt as right as Jumping Flash did.
Yeah.
As far as
the control, you can find yourself very astray pretty easily, and you're like, oh man, I didn't mean to go that way. Or
right.
Navigating in the 3D plane in Jumping Flash is just so damn good.
Right, and that's something that
it was hard but fair.
But this, yes. And that's what this game's got right. I think the navigating in the 3D platforming is really good on this. So
yeah, you got to think ahead a little bit sometimes.
Well, yes, but it's
so
still,
the more.
You can think ahead, and it will make sense.
It will help you.
Yeah.
It'll definitely help you.
All right.
Before you pass that robot that you should have picked up.
Yeah,
like
well.
Like I do all the time. You can have a little bit too much fun jumping around. I'm just saying. You can have it.
Make it a little less fun, damn it.
All right.
I'll try.
So let's go ahead and wrap this up, Rob. Wait, let me.
No.
Always. All right. Thank you all for watching Guys, Games, and Beer. You can check us out on Facebook, Free Game Fridays, www.facebook.com/guysgamesandbeer, and join the scads, the hundreds of other Guys, Games, and Beer.
Damn, 1,000.
We're, yeah,
people who are just there to get free games.
Well, like we're 15
short of
1,000, so yeah.
Yeah.
Continue.
So tell all your friends.
So,
on Twitter.
14 of your friends.
On Twitter.
Do we have a prize for Do we have a prize for like the thousands?
Well, no, we don't.
No.
At Guys Games Beer on Twitter.
Okay, so because he just mentioned the Twitter, we will give away a game tomorrow on Twitter for to get you over the hump day. So if you're on,
this doesn't get posted until Thursday. Oh.
No, this is live right now. So anybody can watch it.
Yeah. So if you're watching this right now live, if you're watching this Thursday, the game's already gone. I'll give away a game tomorrow on Twitter.
Don't worry, there's still free game Friday.
It's a dromedary week, 2 hump days. You can do it whenever.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Agree with that.
I always need a couple humps to get me through the week.
That's right. All
right. Website, www.guysgamesandbeer.net.
Yeah, I like that.
Don't forget that the Midwest Gaming Classic is coming up, one of our larger events of the year, and we will, of course, be there live if you are. It's sold out now, though, isn't it?
Is the VIG is sold out, I think.
VIG
is
sold out.
Not the whole
thing.
VIG is the event isn't sold out.
Yeah.
The hotel's
VIG
sold out,
is.
They're
on their third hotel.
They're on their third hotel.
Never mind. Okay. So, we are going to be, like Rob said, at Midwest Gaming Classic, which is April 7th, 8th, and 9th. The 7th, we will be doing trivia in the bar. Along with
at midnight.
Along with
Johnny Gioli. Crush 40,
who does video game music, and we will be doing live trivia with him Friday night for you lucky VIGs. If you haven't gotten a VIG ticket, if there's any left, you should pick one up now. And that's coming up fast. It's just about a month out. So make sure to catch us at Midwest Gaming Classic. We'll do some live segments from the Midwest Gaming Classic, but come out and have a beer with us. It's a lot more fun.
And we will, of course, have giveaways as we always
do. Oh my God, will we have giveaways?
We have to bribe you to watch us.
Because we got legally detained from doing those, but there will definitely be giveaways.
All right, so.
Don't even want to talk about it. All right, check out.
Come up from Texas.
Keep it moving,
people. This is a great event.
Thank you very much for Tyrus for coming out. Check out Cloudbase Prime. There will be a link in the description below here for $10. It's really a no-brainer, honestly. I can't really recommend it enough. There's so few really fresh games out there. So, you know, be sure to support developers who come out with fresh games that are fun to play. That's all I have to say for this week.
Yay. All right. Cheers to that.
See you guys next week.
Bye, guys. See you guys next week, Little.